to Massimo.
Hi, I'm Massimo, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Massimo.
This is a first for me on various levels. I've never been to this meeting before, so it's a pleasure to see you all here. I have never done a chair with a mic before, and that's pretty weird. But anyway, the message remains the same. Just quickly tell you where I am right now. I've been in bed for a couple of days, not feeling too good, so hopefully I won't kind of crash and burn through this. But actually, I'm apart from being a bit nervous, I'm feeling a bit crazy as a result of that. And it's probably really good for me to get half an hour or so to talk, because I've only been talking to my dog for the last 2 or 3 days. And she looks pretty bored. Yeah, I mean, I went to a meeting last night, irrespective of, you know, how bad I was feeling. I went, and there were a couple of guys there who are about 30 years clean, and they said, basically, what they do is they go to a couple of meetings a week, and they, you know, they pray, and they meditate, and they do something every day, and very simply, they say, we don't need to use today. And that's what they do every day, and that's how they got to where they are today. And it's pretty much that simple, I suppose. So, if you want to go now, you can go. But I mean, it is, on a very simple level, that's what it is. It's not easy. I don't find that maintenance factor that easy, because that's not really hardwired into me. And you know, there's definitely an element of insanity within me. And that's really what I have to deal with today. It kind of springs up when it wants to. And but anyway, let's go back. Since I've got 40 minutes, I can indulge a bit. I mean, I got to this program pretty late. I suppose on an average, on a statistical level, I got here when I was 40. I'm about 12 and a half years clean now, and I've stayed clean since I got here, so you can work out my age too. And I tried to stop for years and years and years on my own, and it didn't work. I started using drugs when I was about 16. Before that, I really wasn't that interested, actually. I didn't really think about them that much, but then I just kind of fell into it. It became what was cool, really. That's what everybody around me did. And I wanted to hang out with those other guys who I thought were cool. And, yeah, you might think I'm a bit superficial, but that's how I was, you know. I didn't feel too comfortable with myself, you know, not fully, no, not at all, and there was something attractive about the, you know, the sort of dark side of sort of being with the guys who were a bit dark, you know, it was all a bit shady, it was all a bit, and there was, to be honest, it was a lot of fun, some of it, there was a lot of fun, and to be more honest, I fell in love with drugs. That's what happened. To the detriment of loving myself. You know, the drugs became God, and I lost the plot. And it was quite enjoyable losing the plot, because once you throw the plot out of the window, then pretty much anything goes. And it's only when the plot comes back and smacks you in the face and you fall over that you sort of think, whoa, I either pick up the plot again or I'm out of here, you know. And you know, on a serious note, we only have to see, you know, like this week, I mean, this illness affects, it doesn't matter where you come from, it doesn't matter how much money you've got, it doesn't matter what class you may think you belong to, what nationality, you know, whatever. I mean, you saw the you know, you probably saw the news, and there's this great Oscar-winning actor relapses and dies. You know, that's really sad. You know, someone's immense amount of talent, but you know, he's one of us. You know, he was one of us. And that's just, you know, that's my experience. There are constant reminders that this is really, 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 really just a daily program. You know, there's programs full of cliches and probably like you, I hate some of them, but, you know, one of them that I've heard is the world record clean time is 24 hours. You know, that's it. That's pretty much all we have to do is stay clean today. But, you know, going back to the using, I mean, I just really got into it, and I was always interested in mixing it up. You know, I just kind of like wanted to try different drugs, different mixtures, different people. Just constantly, I didn't know that there was such a thing as switching then, but that's what I did. And but I mean, predominantly, I smoked a lot of dope, and I took a lot of coke, and I managed to somehow control it, because in my using, I even started up a company and I ran it for about 15 years. No, I'm not allowed to say that word. I don't know how I managed to do that, but I did. And, you know, with the power of retrospection and some sanity, I can see that there was a lot of support. I got a lot of support which I didn't recognise. And so I was a workaholic. That's one of my addictions. I was a workaholic, and I just kept going. And, you know, even though I was getting madder and madder. And I'll just tell you two little stories that metaphorically pretty much tell you what my life was like when I was using it, because you've all taken drugs, you know what it's like. But I'll give you one little incident. We're coming back from a New Year's Day in sort of 1980. Had an amazing New Year's Day. Took some acid, got totally spaced out. We were in the car coming back on the M4, coming back into town. And it was dark, and there's four of us in the car. I think some of us just had our ears pierced. I'd never had my ears pierced before, so we were kind of got like a stupid grin on our face, looking totally spaced out, and we're looking at it. And then somebody says, let's roll a joint, and we couldn't find any papers. So we kind of did a lot of rustling around, trying to find these papers. We couldn't find any papers, so we pulled up on the side of the motorway. We looked. And we couldn't find them, so we said, okay, look, we'll just get some at the next turn off, we'll get off whenever. And so I'm driving the car, I start to speed up on the emergency lane. And as I'm going along, it's pitch dark, we're driving this really small Mini, and suddenly right in front of me, there's this huge lorry tire. I didn't even think. I just got hold of the steering wheel, and I just turned it immediately to the right, and the car picked up on two wheels, and we're just heading for the central reservation. I somehow managed to get it back, and we zigzagged the full width of the motorway three times and came to a stop in the middle, sideways on in the motorway. We kind of turn round, and there's an articulated lorry beaming down on us. Somehow I find reverse gear and reverse off and stop, and then just as we stop, the lorry goes zooming past. And we all look at each other. And we came to a fairly abrupt decision to get off at the next stop and buy some cigarette papers. But I mean, we were kind of unlucky to have got into that situation to some degree, but that kind of describes what it was like using, you know, that's what it was like. And then about 2 years later, I went with some friends to Morocco. And people like us, when we're not in recovery, only go to Morocco for one reason. And I met my friends. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I met my friends, and we all thought we were incredibly cool because they had a London taxi, and we had a windsurf board on the top, and we all So one day we went to this beach south of Tangiers, and we went windsurfing, and my friend went windsurfing, and then he handed me the windsurf board. I went windsurfing, and I had the time of my life. It was absolutely amazing, zipping around. And then, without me realising it, the wind just picked up, and I hadn't noticed. And then I was going along, and I just got thrown about 20 feet off the board and got back on, and I couldn't get the sail out of the water because the wind had picked up and got so strong. And we were in this little bay, and I called for help, and one of my friends came swimming out to me. And by the time he came out to me, the wind had got even stronger, and he got on the board and he tried to pick the sail up. He couldn't get it out of the water, so we didn't know what to do. So we were on this board, the two of us. The wind was getting really strong. The wind had turned, so it was an offshore wind. And we had been blown out to sea. And so we ditched the mast with the sail to make it lighter, and we tried to paddle back in, but we couldn't get back because we couldn't make any headway against the sea because the wind was so strong. So we thought, okay. So we just sat on the board and we just started to float out. And we looked around and we suddenly realised that there was nobody else. We'd gone to this beach where there was nobody else, which we thought was brilliant because we wanted to go to a beach where there was nobody else. But when you're knee-deep, you know, in trouble, that's not such a great thing. And so we just kept floating, and we kept floating, and we kept floating, and we just went further out to sea. And to cut this story a little bit short, after about 2.5 hours, we were about 2 miles off the coast, and the waves are about the height of this room, and we're just going up and down, bobbing up and down. And then my friend, we were sitting like on a horse, yeah, like two of us, one in front of the other, I was in front, he was behind, and he kicks me, he says, "Don't move." As soon as he says that, of course, I jump out of the water, and this fin just sort of goes fast. And, you know, we'd only just seen Jaws, you know, a couple of years before. And anyway, so luckily the shark didn't come back, we just kept going. And then 3-4 hours, we just went out. Anyway, we thought we were done, you know, we were really done in. And after about 7 hours, we were 5.5 miles off the coast of Africa. It was getting a bit hazy. Could just about see Africa in the distance. Somehow, this little ship came along and we passed in front of it, and we wave, screaming, "Help!" And this ship just went really, everything's like, when things are like that, everything happens in slow motion. And just the ship went by, we're screaming, screaming. And then this guy came out on the deck right at the back, and we were like looking at each other. He saw us. And he just watched this ship kept going. And suddenly it starts to just turn, and it stops. And we, obviously, I'm here. But I've often thought that is pretty much my story of getting into recovery. You know, that's pretty much what it was like. You know, I was really desperate, and I was screaming for help, and I thought I'd lost the chance, and it was there, you know. Actually, that was a very, very, very scary moment, and I feel really lucky to be alive. And getting into recovery for me was similarly scary, different, but it was scary. And I just, you know, I just saw that I was being given this chance. I was given a serious second chance, really, and I needed to go through the treatment route, because I really didn't think I was that much of an addict, you know, because I managed to stop a few times. I've run my own business and stuff, but I, you know, I am an addict, and I just didn't really want to look at difficult stuff. And so 12 and a half years ago or so, I surrendered. And my first 24 hours in recovery were pretty extraordinary, I have to tell you. You couldn't have written this in a film script. It was pretty bloody weird. I end up in this treatment centre, and I'm pretty, as we are, pretty shaky. And I have my appointment with a psychiatrist, okay? So I'm there with this guy, and we're talking, and his phone rings, his mobile rings, and he says, I don't normally do this, but do you mind if I take this call? And I said, yeah, sure, sure. Although inside I was thinking, hello, I'm here. Excuse me, how much more screwed up do I have to be before I get some attention? He's talking, and he's looking at me, and he's talking, and he hangs up, and he says, someone's just flown a plane into the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like 24 hours clean, and it was weird, because in the treatment center, the world had gone so weird, they gave us the day off. So we all stood in front of a TV watching rewinds and rewinds of planes flying into the World Trade Center. So that was a pretty weird beginning, and because it really felt like the world, not just my life, but it felt like the world was changing, you know. And yeah, I'm getting a bit grandiose, so I'll just step it down a bit. But I mean, no, honestly, it did. It just felt like, wow, you know, there's so much. That was like, it really shook me, because I just thought, because every day with the treatment centre I was, planes flew above us the whole time. And then suddenly, for 3 days or 4 days, there were no planes. So it all went silent. So, that, you know, it's like, it was just odd, you know. Everything just changed. I can just tell you that, you know, I'll move on to the recovery side in a second, but I can just say that in my 20-odd years of using, I did try and stop so many times, and I'll just say this, that there were two moments. My mother died in 85, and I just kept, although I was there for her, I just kept using it. I never really grieved. And then I got to about 5 years after she died. I was in a pretty bad state. And so my girlfriend said, well, I think you better go and see someone. So I went to see this counsellor. And we sat down, and I started to talk about it. And she said, well, have you ever thought about, you know, that you might have a drug problem? I said, no, I don't know about that. And she said, well, look, why don't you try and stop for like a couple of weeks? And in those 2 weeks, I stopped, and it was very odd. I mean, it's not when you really think about it, but I know, yeah, it was odd stopping. But it was. I suddenly, because I stopped, I actually started grieving. So it was like I put everything on hold. I didn't actually grieve my mother's death till those 2 or 3 weeks, which I stopped. Yeah, I put my entire emotions on hold on a deep level. And so it was like she died the day before, but it was actually 5 years before. And it was, I mean, I was so glad I did it, because I was obviously carrying around a lot of grief. But that also gave me a pretty good, now, you know, with retrospect, I can see how much drugs freeze us, yeah? We don't really feel. I don't feel anyway. I don't feel much, and it's really easy to bury the feelings with drugs. And then another little. So I actually managed to stop for a month, and then after a month, I grieved, and then I went back to it because I didn't have any support. I was just trying to do it on my own, and found it all too scary, and it was much easier to start using again. And then about 6 years later, I got, I went a bit crazy. I was working really hard. My work was actually doing pretty well, but I was cracking up, and I got infatuated with this woman. And I, anyway, I stopped for 3 months on my own, and I can tell you that I was probably crazier in those 3 months than I'd been in after about 15 years of using. I was completely bonkers, totally nuts. And we don't have enough time to go into some of the stuff I got up to, not using without any kind of recovery or program. I was crazy, and I after 3 months, you know, everyone was saying to me, "You need some drugs, mate, because you've got meditating. You're totally crazy," you know. And so I went back to using, and then eventually, a few years after, they just didn't work. You know, they just didn't work. Although I'd kind of slowed it all right down, every time I took them, it wasn't. You know, that's that line about one is too many. I can so relate to that, because one, anything drove me. I started to get panic attacks after one line of coke. I used to get panic attacks after smoking a couple of spliffs. It was not a question of quantity. My system could no longer handle drugs. You know, they just could not handle them. I knew that I couldn't handle drugs, but I still, it took me, you know, to get to really, just dark, really depressed place to, and I was frightened. I was really frightened, to be honest. So yeah, I found recovery, and it is definitely a new life. The last 12 and a half years have been the beginning of a new life, and it's been very much two steps forward, one step back, I'd say. Sometimes a bit sideways and a bit all over the place, but I'd say that, you know, every day that I stay clean, there's some progress, there's some growth, there's some appreciation, there's some value. I find some little bit more love in my life, and it has been a really, and continues to be a really slow process, and seems like my default kind of timing is for everything to want everything to go really quickly. And I don't know why, because, I mean, it's, you know, life's to be enjoyed. And when I do really enjoy things, you don't really think about time. You know, you go in that timeless kind of zone where you just kind of appreciate things and you just value things, and yet I, you know, even today I still deal with, you know, handling anxiety and fear, and you know, I'm challenged, but I learn so much. I mean, there's no doubt that the reason I'm here today is because of this, and the reason why this works as far as I can work out is that it gives me so much support on different levels. And, you know, I'm going to talk about them in a minute, but I mean, the fact that we have meetings where I can go and say whatever I want. Okay, tonight I can't swear, but, you know, normally I can say whatever I want. The fact that, really, you know, that therapeutic thing, you know, the fact that I'm with like-minded people, we understand each other. So there's, you know, that sense of connection is so important. I need to connect with other people, because I very easily can lose connection to pretty much everything and just find myself as a bit of an island and not in a great place, really. The fact that there are some principles, there's a structure, you know, we have these steps. And the fact that, you know, I can have a thing called a sponsor, a person called a sponsor. These actually, you know, and also service, you know, these, you know, the four S's I was taught very early on, I was shown, you know, you've got to share, find a sponsor, do some service, and work the steps. You know, that's what I was told. And if I do at least one of those things on some level every day, I'll gain something. If I do more, I'll probably get, you know, I'll get a bonus reward, you know. But it doesn't come naturally. I have to work at it. That's pretty clear. Like anything in life, we have to work at it. And I can remember going to my first meetings. I could not share at all for about 2 to 3 months. And I thought there was something actually wrong with me. You know, I was just thought that I was incapable of opening my mouth in front of other people and saying something as simple as, I'm frightened, I'm lonely, I'm mad, I need help, I don't want to be here. You know, whatever it was, yeah, I just couldn't open my mouth and say it. I just could not share. And I used to go out of the meetings and say, I just can't share. And then people just kept saying, just keep going back. It doesn't matter, you don't have to share. You just go. And eventually, one day, I shared. And it's got a little bit easier with time. But it's a really important thing for me to do. What I learn is that if I can share the thing that I find most difficult to share on a given day, at a given moment, then I'm doing well. That's really good. That deserves a pat on the back, and well done, me. And because so many of you and people I've been, you know, to meetings that have done that and have shown me the way, I've sort of, by osmosis, have taken some of that in and have learned to do that. And one of the things that really strikes me today is that irrespective of all this knowledge and support and everything we do, you know, in recovery, which I do in recovery, I live with some crazy self-destructive core element that has a mind of its own, which is pretty scary. And so the question is, which someone said last night, you know, very, very wisely, they said, is this addict being treated at the moment? The question I should ask myself is, am I an addict who's being treated today? You know, am I okay? Am I doing what I need to do today? Because, you know, it really is. It's there all the time on some hidden level. You know, we hear that other cliche about being baffling, powerful, cunning. But it is. And the longer I stay in recovery, you know, the more I realise it. You know, I'm doing absolutely brilliantly well. Walking the dog in the park, and I can just think, oh, well, I could just kill myself, perhaps, or maybe the dog will get run over and I won't have to walk her anymore. And I think, where the that come from, you know? Like, hang on a minute. And it scares me, but that's genuinely what goes on. And I'm like, whoa, you know, and I'm sort of recoiling, and I think, God, and then it takes me, you know, however long it takes me, it feels like a long time, maybe it's 3 seconds. Probably isn't a lot longer. Then I suddenly think, oh yeah, I'm an addict. You know, we have this, we carry this, I certainly carry this dark layer of thought with me all the time, and it sits there either in the box or outside the box or waving at me, whatever, it's there. And you know, that's part of me, and I still struggle at times to accept that. You know, I really do. Sometimes I think, oh, God, please, do we have to? I mean, it's like, It's like sort of being in a bad soap opera some of the time, being in recovery. You know, it really is. Being in my mind is like being in the worst soap opera I'd never want to watch. I've had quite a lot of therapy in recovery. And I had this Argentinian therapist. And he listened to me, and I was going on about this girlfriend I split up from, and he said, "But you sound like some Venezuelan soap opera." I said, "What?" He said, "Oh yeah, Venezuela. All the soap operas about crazy relationships." I'm like, "Well, is there?" I thought, "Okay, thank you." So that was another £60 well spent. But I mean, that's what I'm like. I'm afraid, a bit of a soap opera. There's a soap opera element to me, but it's a soap opera that can go dangerously wrong. And a soap opera is people die and people go nuts. But that's just a drama. This is actually real life. But there's like, God Almighty. So you know, it's like, there is that element to it too. That's what I find. So anyway, I don't know where I got to on that one. But anyway.
5 minutes.
Got 5 minutes. That's good. So anyway, look, I just want to quickly say that I have kept coming to meetings, and I go on average about twice a week. Good weeks I go 3 times, bad week I go once, but I keep coming, I keep going. I'm usually in touch with somebody in recovery every day. I have worked them, and they are so helpful that I should do a lot more. But you know, I go to some meetings where, you know, they just concentrate like on certain steps. I find that helps me just keep in the swing of steps, and you know, they're all so relevant, and I do pray each day. I find that helps. I start and I end my day with a prayer. When I really need to, I'll say a prayer. I'm not entirely sure what I'm praying to, but I just sort of connect with a sense of, you know, I do believe there's a sense of goodness in me and out there, and I just feel that I'm happy doing that, you know. I even looked up the word prayer in the dictionary, and it said to earnestly request something. So even if you take it on a completely non-religious angle, that's it. I mean, I'm asking for help, for support out there, and you know, and this is what this program teaches me. You know, I can do it in a meeting, I can do it just talking to someone, and it just helps. I don't feel right if I don't do that. Meditation, it comes and goes a bit with me, and I'm better off for it when I do it. Sometimes I find it hard just to slow everything down. I just, you know, God, I'm so much happier when I slow things down. You know, I just, the steps constantly remind me of, you know, my defects, about the importance of forgiving myself, of being responsible and wanting to make amends, you know, taking responsibility for my actions, taking responsibility, you know, being much, you know, consequences. I did not think about consequences much when I was using. My recovery is more and more about thinking about consequences, you know, about thinking things through a bit more, but still I've got a lot to learn there. You know, the steps remind me that I'm, you know, how manageable am I? How powerless am I? I'm powerless over drugs. I'm powerless over other people. You know, all these simple things, they just help me kind of stay on track, because I forget. I sort of sometimes feel recovery is a disease of amnesia. Mm-hmm. You know, I can start the day thinking, whoa, I've really got this sorted, and by about 2 p.m. I can just sort of, what? Sorry? And it's a bit like that inside, you know. So I constantly need prompts, and you know, to get back in the groove, and you know, just letting go, handing it over, just letting go, you know, just let go. It's all right. Just let go. It's okay. You're, you know, things will be okay if you just keep doing this. And despite all the catastrophizing I can do, that's been my experience. You know, things have been okay. Things continue to be okay. And I've had to, you know, I try and promptly own up to things that, you know, when I go wrong, I do my best. They help so much. And to be reminded of my defects, it's not perhaps that pleasant some of the time, but the reality is that I am, you know, have a load of defects, and they're going to be with me for my whole life, so let's try and be mates with the defects, okay? And they don't have to ruin me. I'll accept them, and I'll try and work with them. That's what I try and do. And that's what I try and learn. And then I do want to talk about service. I know we're running out of time. I just want to talk about service, because service has been a really important part of my recovery. I have pretty much done service non-stop. It was recommended to me, and it's been really good because it's I've met so many people doing service. I think pretty much everyone I know in this room has been through doing service, and that's great. I mean, I don't know that many of you, but you know, there certainly is a bunch of you I do know, and you know, we've done stuff together, and it's been a real privilege. I've worked on the London Convention, and that was quite an experience. Mm-hmm. You should try committee meetings at the London Convention. That's a real experience. But you know, we get these things together, and we put on a good show, and you know, we raise a lot of money and forge really good friendships with other people, and really feel part of something. And I've worked on the website and recovery, and that's also been really. At the moment I'm doing some helpline. And that's interesting. You don't know who you're going to talk to, what situation. They're all just reminders of, you know, where people are at, and there's a good mirror of where I'm at. I'm a secretary at the moment of a meeting, so service is really important to me. And so I think I've spoken probably even too long, but it's been a real honour to be here to share this time with you, and I am really grateful to have this. You know, I feel a really good connection with you all, and where would I be without this? You know, I don't even want to think about it, but we've got this, and it's just an amazing thing. And thank you all for being part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.